Okay. We're recording now.
Are we?
Trey Excite.
Hello, we are the Righteous Rumble podcast, screaming into your internet echo chamber one painful episode at a time. I'm Jimmy, and I voted to leave the EU in 2016.
I'm Jazza, and I still cry myself to sleep at the prospect of not having European Union in little letters on the front of my passport.
Should we continue?
Yeah.
Okay. So much for the professional intro. We meet weekly to talk about UK and global politics, current affairs and social issues. Jazza, how's it going?
It's really good. I'm very hot. Are you also warm? I'm like sweating just by being stationary.
Are you wearing shorts?
No, I am wearing rolled up skinny jeans.
I can confirm that Jazza is in fact not wearing shorts, which is rare for July.
Why do you hate my ability to self-regulate my temperature?
You wear a lot of shorts.
Yeah, because it gets hot in the summer. I don't understand why you hate it so much. Are you conscious, self-conscious about your legs? Because we can talk about that off.
I'll take off my trousers right now if you want, mate.
I'm fine.
There you go.
How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Slightly hotter than you, I think, because I'm, you know, wearing proper trousers rather than roll-ups.
I mean, it's not about proper or improper. So, yeah, as Jimmy said in our new intro, did you like it? We talk about politics, social issues and current events weekly. This week, what are we going to be talking about, Jimmy?
We haven't actually discussed an order for topics.
That's
Shall
fine.
I just spew them out at random?
I was expecting you to just, you know, chuck shit at the wall and see what sticks.
We'll probably start with something that Vince Cable said to the New Statesman, or various things that Vince Cable said.
He had a whole conversation with them.
He did, you know, almost like that's what they do for a living. Anyway, he's going to be the next leader of the Lib Dems. I almost said probably, but every other available candidate has already ruled themselves out.
Great.
So this is following Tim Farron's departure, one of Jazza's favourite politicians.
I mean, he was just unfortunately homophobic.
Theologically, but...
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you can put whatever adjective you want in front of it, Jimmy, but it's still homophobia.
Okay, we'll discuss that later. Anyway, Vince Cable was a member of the coalition government back in 2010, if you can remember that far back. That feels like a long
time
ago.
Good times, yeah, the halcyon days of the coalition government.
And he was the economics minister?
He was the business secretary.
Business secretary.
And he was the guy who oversaw the privatisation of Royal Mail. Which even Margaret Thatcher wouldn't do. Anyway, we'll talk about that later. We're also going to be chatting about the fact that Catalunya... or Catalonia, as I'm sure Jimmy is.
Catalonia.
It's on the Costa Brava, isn't it? The northeastern province of Spain that has its own language, is devolved, has its own, government. They have, for the second time in 3 years, said, hey, we're going to have a referendum on independence. And Madrid, being the capital where the central government is based, have gone like, nah. And so this is the latest in the saga of Catalonian independence,
How many referendums do they need, unofficially, before they can actually leave?
I mean, who the fuck knows? But what's really interesting is how tight the polls are for something like Catalonian independence, much closer than it ever was for Brexit and for Scottish independence, at least when those campaigns started. Mm-hmm. They obviously narrowed. But people who live in Catalonia are split on the issue. It's very fascinating.
Very exciting. We do enjoy separatist movements.
We love a good referendum here.
And finally, we are going to be discussing a new proposal from the Advertising Standards Authority.
Yeah, the good old ASA.
This is a far sexier topic than it initially sounds. Essentially following on from, I think it was last summer's furore around the Beachbody Ready advert.
Oh, it was 2005, I believe, was when they had the...
It's later than that. It's 2015.
Oh, sorry, 2015. My Jazza brain remembered there was a 5 in the number and it started with 2000 and...
Anyway, that was the advert which asked people if they were Beachbody ready.
My body was born beach ready, Jimmy. Yeah. I don't know about you.
And it featured a scantily clad lady on the front.
Whose head, I'm pretty sure, was wider than her actual waist, which I don't think is normal proportions.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable. Anyway, these proposals... basically would ban kind of, or would push back, let's say, against gender stereotyping in adverts, which is quite a vaguely defined thing.
Yeah, but examples are being given of men being bad at day-to-day chores around the house.
Or just life, really.
And life. And women only like being interested in like pretty things.
Yeah, more or less. So
I'm actually really curious to see what you think about this.
I think I already know what you think about this.
Stay tuned.
More on that later.
More on that later after a quick message from our sponsor.
Okay, do you want to...
Hello, dear listener, Jazza here. Let me take just a few moments of your time to talk about Squarespace. I am obviously only joking. We haven't hit the big bucks yet, but I hope that you guys have noticed that, unlike the vast majority of current events podcasts in the UK, we aren't backed by a media conglomerate, we don't have ads, and we certainly don't get paid for this. We actually recently did some maths and found out that we sunk nearly £1,000 into this podcast, which is like web hosting fees, equipment, the website, all of that kind of stuff. And we love being able to do this, but we do need a way to make this more viable for us, especially as we do our best to put out an episode a week for you guys. As such, we are starting a Patreon. You can find out about that in the show notes or on patreon.com/rightdishonorable, where you can pledge to give us any amount of money you want per episode. You can think of it as a type of tip jar. The lowest tier is $1, and if you think each episode is worth that, just $1, then please do sign up and be a patron. Each tier has rewards, and they include stuff like merchandise, which is very exciting. We're going to have mugs and things like that. The highest tier lets you be a guest on the show, which is really cool, and there's going to be loads of bonus content on the Patreon feed as well. This podcast, however, that you're listening to right now will always, always be free. We love you guys, and being able to do this and have a group of people who listen is really a privilege and an honour. Whether you decide to be a patron or not, we hope that you continue to enjoy listening to us and having me pester you for reviews on iTunes every episode. Please leave us a review on iTunes. So, now, on with the show.
So, earlier this month, Vince Cable gave an interview to the New Statesman where he indicates a number of things about the Lib Dems' direction going forward. He talked about the anti-Brexit stance of the Lib Dems during the general election, which obviously didn't win them an awful lot of votes. Their vote share went down, although their seat numbers went up. Mm-hmm. They're now on 12 seats.
They are on 12 seats. But got really, really close in like 5. So we could have had 17.
Are you still a member of the Lib Dems?
I renewed my membership so I could not vote for Vince Cable.
I considered renewing my membership.
What, so you could vote to reopen nominations? Because that's literally the only reason that I've joined again, so that I can protest.
Protest
Vince
Cable.
He paid money.
So why don't you like Vince Cable?
I don't not like Vince Cable, but I think the idea of having a leadership contest without a fucking contest is bloody pointless. And they've gone really, really well in the past. I've mentioned last week the parallels of Theresa May and Gordon Brown. And they turned out great, didn't they?
But if no one else is willing to stand, then what's the point?
But why is nobody willing to stand? I feel like a party, especially like the Lib Dems, that is going through a little bit of a crisis after a bit of a rocky couple of general elections, you need to have some kind of introspection. You need to have some kind of a debate as to who you're going to be. And Vince Cable is very much just a continuity of what has gone before. And I think there needs to at least be a conversation about whether or not stuff needs to be changed up a little bit. I'm very disappointed, like I think most people are, that Jo Swinson, who is young and a lady and a mother, would have been very novel for everybody involved, yes.
But when Andrea Leadsom said that she'd be a better Prime Minister and Tory leader because she was a mother, you didn't think that was much of a selling point.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just naming things about Jo Swinson about that I think are good. like she has brown hair. Very good.
I didn't realise you're an anti-blonde. Terrible.
Well, I mean, understandable, right? I'm mainly thinking Trump.
Oh, right.
Mm. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Oh, yeah. See, this is the second one of your gags this afternoon that hasn't gone anywhere.
Rude. I think I'm very funny. But yeah, I'm thoroughly frustrated by the
whole
thing.
But I remember the Farron...
Even if Norman Lamb were to run again, just as like, if you don't like him, you can vote for me. Which is basically what Norman Lamb's idea was last
time. There wasn't very much between Tim Farron and Norman Lamb in the last contest.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Wouldn't that have been kind of a good idea to maybe have a... I don't know.
What?
So one of the things that was quite interesting in this article by Anoush, what's her name?
Anoush Shakilian of the New Statesman.
Thank you. Was that she identified that Norman Lamb was criticised when there was the previous leadership contest of the Lib Dems in 2015 after the general election, where Clegg stepped down.
Mm. What was he criticised for, Norman Lamb?
He was criticised for not... focusing in on Tim Farron's faith as a possible distraction. Mm. And so there was no internal debate as to whether or not there would be a... whether having such a devout Catholic as the representative, whether that would possibly take away from...
Is he a Catholic?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Whether that would take away from the... And his beliefs in that area, whether that would take away from... his ability to present legislation properly. And that is exactly what happened in the 2017
election.
I just
don't see that Norman Lamb could really do something like that.
He kind of tried and then got a huge amount of pushback. I remember in like the Lib Dem newsletters and stuff, there was talk of the fact that he'd done some vaguely negative stuff at some... He'd mentioned some vaguely negative stuff at some hustings about Tim Farron and the distractions of his faith and all of that.
See,
kind of
I went to a debate between the two of them in London, and I don't remember that coming up. It might have done, but I don't recall it. I don't really see that you can... use somebody's faith against them, particularly in a liberal party, because it would be seen as illiberal and sort of culturally insensitive and all that sort of thing, even if their faith did incline them towards illiberal policies.
But this is kind of what Shakilian was saying, that the fact that the Lib Dems were not able to have that internal conversation about the possible pitfalls of having a leader like that and not having that information on the table and properly debated meant that it was just... used as a bludgeoning weapon by Labour and the Conservatives in the election this year.
I don't think it was used by the Conservatives so much, because Theresa May is a Christian and also has a pretty patchy record on gay rights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if it was used by Labour. It was certainly used by Channel 4.
Yeah. Cathy Newman, the news presenter there, kind of relishes in asking Tim Farron again and again what he thinks of bum sex.
It does seem to me to be quite a stupid strategy from Channel 4's point of view. Because, I mean, without beating around the bush, Channel 4 is a progressive broadcaster. Mm-hmm. I know it has a mandate for balance, but it is very biased. Mm-hmm. If you see it as a kind of campaigning organisation, it's very counterproductive to attack somebody like Tim Farron, whose voting record is actually largely very pro-LGBT.
Mm-hmm.
So it seemed like a dumb thing from that point of view, but you know, you could equally see it the other way as saying he never should have been elected leader because that was probably going to happen at some point.
So I do understand that in terms of like the angle and the use of faith specifically, but I think that message that the fact that demons of a particular candidate would not be able to be debated properly to make sure that they are an appropriate person to represent the whole party. Mm. I think that we would see mirrors of that with a Vince Cable leadership if he just ends up getting anointed, which is probably what's going to happen, especially when it comes to his record as a minister in the coalition government, where he... was in charge of stuff like raising tuition fees. Mm. He was in charge of privatising Royal Mail, all of which are incredibly unpopular things amongst especially younger people who are traditionally or in the past have been very important blocks of Lib Dem voters. And people in wider society who vote Labour but sometimes use the Lib Dems as a protest vote. If you all you need to do is throw those accusations at Vince Cable and the whole rest of the deck of cards comes crashing down.
I guess so. I the thing is, the tuition fees, the Lib Dems are just tarnished now. Like, it really, that is kind of an irrelevant issue.
But he is literally the person who pushed through the legislation. He's the person who wrote the legislation. And I think if we had somebody who... So Joe Swinson was a minister in the coalition government, but she was nowhere near as prominent as a lot of her colleagues like Nick Clegg.
I mean,
like
but Tim Farron was like, even further away from
Tim Farron was even further away, but Joe Swinson isn't a homophobe.
Well, I'm not saying Joseph Swinson's the worst candidate. I'm saying that you've got to think about this in terms of overall branding, and the details of who was and was not involved in a particular piece of legislation are not of much concern to the general public.
But she was on maternity leave for a good couple of years during that.
I said, the details don't matter.
I think that the details do matter. I think if you have the guy who literally put that stuff through,
well, Tim Farron was not really involved in the coalition government. Like, fundamentally, as you said previously on the podcast, he largely ducked out because he didn't want the poison to be transferred to him. Also, if you're going to talk details, Tim Farron, as I said, very pro-LGBT in terms of his voting record. Mm-hmm. That's a detail. But overall, the general message is bad because he's theologically opposed to homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So, those two things that you've put across don't really comply with one another.
I disagree. I think I'm making a lot of sense. Do you not agree that somebody to represent and distance themselves from their time under with a conservative partner in coalition? Do you not agree that somebody like Joe Swinson, who was nowhere near as visible as Vince Cable, would be better than Vince Cable as somebody who would be able to distance themselves from that time on
I'm not sure it would make much difference, because all you'd have to say is you were part of the coalition government, collective responsibility.
Yeah, but I don't think it sticks as much.
It almost doesn't matter if logically it sticks, because the fact that she was part of that government does matter, I think. Mm-hmm. I think that the Lib Dems, it's going to take a very long time for them to detoxify themselves from that coalition government. Mm-hmm. And it almost doesn't matter who's in charge, frankly.
Well, this is actually something that Vince said. I'll put a pin in that in terms of who's in charge. Remind me, and I'll come back to it. But Vince was saying that because the... EU referendum is so fresh in people's minds, it's such a it's too fresh, it's too people haven't come to the conclusion that it's a bad idea yet. And he was saying that the line that they took of a second referendum and keeping the UK in the European Union was something for was a 2020 message rather than a 2017 message, and they kind of got caught out by the snap election in June.
I'm not so sure, to be honest with you. I think the election that we just had didn't indicate to me that people vote for their MP on the basis of their Brexit position, by and large. I mean, because if you analyse the vote, the general election vote in very simple terms, 80% of people voted for parties whose leaderships are pro-Brexit and want to leave the single market.
Yep.
That is not reflective of how people feel about either of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So... how do you tally that? I don't really know.
It's been really great to hear people like Tony Blair talk about how the Conservatives not getting a majority proves that people weren't sold on hard Brexit. And I'm like, they have been never asked. You're making assumptions. Shut up and go away, Tony Blair.
I mean, if there was a YouGov poll from back in May, and this might have changed now, but it indicated that 2/3 of people were either resigned or actively supportive of the fact that we're going to leave the EU now.
Mm-hmm.
There's still like a quarter who want to block it. This is more evidence of my point, I suppose. There's a quarter of people who want to block Brexit, yet the Lib Dems only picked up 7% of the vote, and they were the most openly anti-Brexit party.
Single market, though, is something that is quite popular.
Yeah.
Like, more people want to stay in the single market than leave it.
Yeah, so there's been a bunch of polls. I'm not sure of the exact numbers, but you're right that people do generally want to leave the single market. But then you could equally say 70% of Britons want to reduce migration. So those two things aren't compatible either.
Mm-hmm.
I think... trying to crib all of this from opinion polls is a bit fraught because different things are not necessarily compatible.
One of the main things that came out of this interview with Vince Cable he's been criticised for saying that gender isn't an issue and race isn't an issue anymore when it comes to electing a leader.
He responded with that statement when he was asked about his age.
Give us some context.
Yeah, just for some context, because people have said, Vince, you're really fucking old. What's that
he's
all about?
He's 74 years old.
And he said, well, you know, Corbyn's old, Bernie Sanders is old. There's lots of old people in politics these days. People are tired of youngsters like Nick Clegg, mm-hmm. who I think just turned 50. Is that correct?
Mm, yes.
Oh, whatever.
And very young. Yeah. Sprightly.
Sprightly people. Yeah.
He actually says, specifically, as gender isn't an issue anymore, rightly so, he adds, thanks to Obama, race isn't really an issue anymore, at least we hope not, and age shouldn't either.
So when he says that, what do you think he actually means?
So I understand what he actually means. I understand that he is basically saying that age should not be... his age as an older person should not be a factor that people take into consideration in the same way that he... I think the word that is missing is hopes gender and race wouldn't be an issue if he was standing for the leadership.
Hmm.
There are clearly still more barriers to women and people of colour to being leaders of political organisations than old white men who
what
can own places
are,
in
what
Twickenham.
What do you think the barriers are to women?
Stuff like maternity leave. Jo Swinson herself said that if she were a man, she would have probably run for the leadership.
That wasn't in relation to maternity leave. That was in relation to the risk averse.
I'm not saying the two are the same, but as an example, maternity leave, comma, Jo Swinson herself.
Oh, right, okay. I mean, what Jo Swinson basically said is that men will have a crack at jobs that they're not necessarily qualified for, either in the kind of certificate sense or just in a general sense, whereas women are more averse to that sort of thing, which is, I think, true. But that isn't saying that there's a barrier to women being in place other than their own psychology.
I mean, yeah, there's institutional sexism.
That's not what she said.
No, but... for goodness sake. I'm not talking about what she said. I'm trying to have a conversation here.
Is it I said so or you responded to it?
you're attributing what I said to what she said, and then I'm very confused.
No, I'm responding directly to the point that she was making, but you're saying there's more general kind of obstacles to women becoming leaders of political parties, such as what...
Such as these being male-dominated spaces where women are often told to sit down, shut up, calm down,
I think most political parties in the UK, most major ones, are led by women at this point.
Yeah, sure, but just because the figurehead is of a particular gender doesn't mean that there is still not a problem.
I would say that's majorly, otherwise they wouldn't, it's otherwise majorly they wouldn't suggestive be, that, otherwise that there you wouldn't have so be many need, female leaders at this point.
Otherwise there wouldn't be a need for stuff like the initiative of Women Who Win that Theresa May's famously rolled out.
She set that up a good 20 years ago.
Yeah, I know. And it took them a good 20 years for them to be able to get a female leader again.
Again, there's very vague kind of assertion that there's massive barriers to women becoming leaders of political parties. I just don't see it, to be honest with you.
Cool. So,
obviously, if you're going to make an assertion like that, you should really have something to back it up with. Something substantive, that's all I'm saying.
Like, I'm not sure what else you want, like...
Well, you haven't said anything. You've just said... You've kind of just asserted something that is the case without really providing any substantive evidence for it.
So, women in an environment like... So, fewer women stand for office than men do.
Mm-hmm.
By a cascading-like logic of that, that means that they are going to be less likely to run for stuff like leadership. They're going to be inhibited by wanting to have families. Like, Jo Swinson is an example of that.
But
she took a couple of years.
Those three things that you're listing could well indicate just different priorities.
They don't have to indicate... I understand your argument there, but that is still a barrier to women being leaders of political parties.
I mean, it's not a barrier of people.
Of course it is.
If people make different choices, then that's people making different choices.
But those choices have been made based on the norms of a society where the man went out to work and the woman stayed at home.
I think somewhat, but there is fairly substantive evidence that the biology actually plays a part in that. But we're going majorly off track here.
What a surprise! And we have a whole section dedicated to sexism.
That's not sexism. That's just science, mate. Okay. To be honest with you,
I'm talking about the ASA thing. You get me so flustered. Anything else you want to say about Vince Cable?
Not necessarily about Vince Cable, but I'm not really sure where I see the Lib Dems in the general kind of political milieu at this point. I just don't really see a role for them.
There was a point in Trakelian's article where she mentions the ideology of the Lib Dems continuing to occupy the centre and then expecting people to eventually move towards them. Do you think that's something that could happen?
Well, the most recent general election results don't really suggest that that's the case, because you actually have more political division between the Tories, the Tory front bench and the Labour front bench than I've really seen when I've been interested in politics. I mean, if you look at the 2010 general election, Gordon Brown versus David Cameron, or if you look at 2015, Ed Miliband versus David Cameron, much, much closer, ideologically speaking, than Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn.
Mm-hmm.
And yet people rushed to the margins. They didn't rush to the centre. They didn't pick the Lib Dems, who were arguably the leadership of the Lib Dems is the only centrist force in British politics at the moment, outside of Wales and Scotland.
There were undoubtedly a lot of people who voted for Labour with the assumption that they also opposed Brexit. I get that impression.
Well,
I think
it was suggested that about 70% of people who voted Labour opposed Brexit,
mm-hmm.
Whereas a much smaller proportion of Tory voters, mm-hmm. You could say the same of.
Do you think that the Lib Dems, as ever, are hindered by a voting system that punishes a third party?
Yeah, but there seems to be something else going on as well, because you have to remember that in a lot of seats, well, in some seats, Lib Dems are actually the second or first party rather than the third party, and therefore it actually makes sense to back the Lib Dems as opposed to Labour. And I know in my mum's constituency, Labour got a huge boost to their votes, even mm-hmm. though, you know, if you wanted the Tories out, the Lib Dems were the party that you voted for,
mm-hmm.
because they're the second party.
Do you think how many people were voting tactically, though? I know there was a big push to vote tactically to keep the Tories out this time around, at least in my circles.
I've no idea on kind of a larger level, mm-hmm. But I'm just kind of, this is why I'm confused or just unsure that the Lib Dems actually have much of a future at this point. They could turn it round, but the thing that actually got them to the position they were under when Nick Clegg was in charge, and also when his predecessor Charles Kennedy was in charge with about 60 seats,
mm-hmm.
it was the result of years and years of just solid local campaigning. It wasn't the result of big ideological shifts, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that would change if Vince Cable were not the next leader? Or do you think it would be possible if the party were able to have that internal dialogue to decide where it goes next?
I'm not sure the next leader matters too much, because I don't think there's a huge ideological schism in the Lib Dems, because they're just not a big enough party.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like with the Tories and Labour, where you have the left wing and the right wing. I mean, in the Lib Dems, you used to have the Orange Bookers, which were the free market, almost libertarian types, and then you had the Social Democrats, which was what Tim Farron was. But nowadays, there's just really not enough of them.
Mm-hmm. Circling back to what I mentioned earlier in terms of like who's in charge when, people have speculated about the fact that Jo Swinson will take over from Vince Cable before the next general election.
So she's becoming deputy leader.
Yes, she's running for deputy leader, also unopposed. Brilliant.
I mean, you can make an argument that they should just run against one another. Whoever comes second place becomes deputy leader.
That would have been a really good idea.
Sensible.
Well, I'm going to vote in both fronts to reopen nominations because I find it very frustrating.
Yeah.
Speaking of votes, segue, Catalonia Thank you. I've been doing this for 85 episodes now.
This is 86.
Yeah, it is 86. Yeah. But we've not finished this one yet.
So it's 85 and a half.
Yeah, exactly. 85 and a third, I think.
Okay,
all right. Catalonia has once again decided to hold a what they assume is going to be a legally binding independence referendum on the 1st of October this year. This comes 3 years after they held what was not a legally binding referendum, which only had a had under a 50% turnout,
I
believe.
37%, I read earlier.
I think it's... yeah, you're correct. And 50% of the population, I believe. 30% of the electorate.
How can it be 50% of the population?
Because not all of the population can vote.
My brain's hurting. I'll tell you a word for it, yeah. Okay.
Only 2.3 million of Catalonia's 5.4 million eligible voters took part. And in that symbolic poll 3 years ago, 80% of participants opted for independence. Obviously, that tells you actually very little, because the people who don't want independence are going to be less likely to turn out for a symbolic poll that costs an awful lot of money to hold and pissed an awful lot of people off. The thing is, the devolved Catalonian government are in a similar position that Scotland was in 2014, where a majority of pro-independent parties are in the Catalonian legislature right now.
So what I read was that the way the current Catalonian parliament is constituted, the pro-independence party's got 48% of the vote, but 52% of the seats.
Yes.
So that's just a shade over a majority. But, you know, it is the margin by which we left the EU. So.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a similar thing happened with the way that the SNP got a majority in the 2000 and...
Yeah, something similar. They got around 50% of the vote. Of the votes for the Scottish MP seats in Westminster. Mm-hmm. This is kind of complicated, but they got most of the seats.
Yes,
all but three of the seats.
Yeah. So the Spanish government based in Madrid hate this. To the point where the previous head of the Catalonian government has been suspended from office for 2 years for holding an illegal poll.
Right.
And the Spanish government are saying that this time around, for the proposed referendum on the 1st of October, they're suggesting that they're going to provoke something called Article 155 in the Spanish Constitution, which would take away all devolved powers from regional governments, which is basically like, hey, lol, guys, martial law. And so they'd close down polling stations, which most of the time are schools in Spain, and it just seems like a little bit of a shit show. And
I'm not a politician, but that doesn't sound like a good idea.
It doesn't sound like a good idea, does it?
I mean, if you've got a whole load of maverick politicians saying they're oppressing us, so then you send in the army. It doesn't really send the right message.
It's not really sending in the army, but it is taking away all of the powers of the regional government.
Right, yeah, okay.
And funnily enough, they'd be able to do that because the vast majority of the... It would be like Westminster voting to not allow Scotland to hold a referendum. Of course they're going to win because Scotland only has 57 MPs or 59 MPs all in all, and there's like 600 seats in Westminster,
so
it's a shit show, Jimmy.
Do you think this is just going to go on and on and on until the Catalonians eventually get an official referendum? Or
I don't understand how else it happens, because the Catalonian independence hasn't been tarred by other regional separatist movements by an awful lot of violence. Obviously, we have the example of the IRA and the unionist armies fighting each other in Northern Ireland and across the UK.
Paramilitaries, I think we should say.
Sure.
Yeah.
They
have the Basque separatists.
Yeah,
Spain,
and so they have ETA, which is Euskadi Askatasuna, I believe, if my Basque serves me correctly. And they are, like, they blow shit up.
Haven't they stopped doing that now?
They have an armistice with the Spanish government. Whereas Catalonia, very similar to the Basque in that they have regional autonomy. They have their own language as well, which was suppressed under the Franco regime, which was in Spain until the 1970s. They've managed to kind of... The push for independence has been largely non-violent. And I don't understand how you can continue to deny what is democratically kind of like...
Inevitable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the more you reject it, and the more that the central government of Madrid rejects it and doesn't allow these autonomous regions to actually function and do what they're put in power to do to a certain extent, the more you're going to end up getting pushback and end up getting negative feelings in those regions. And I feel like continuing to push against the inevitability of there being a referendum, not necessarily there being independence, is pretty futile from the centralised Spanish government.
You could look at it the other way, though. I mean, there is a school of thought that until the Blair government devolved significant powers to Scotland, there wasn't actually a huge appetite for independence, and it was the devolution of those powers that fed into the independence movement and mm-hmm. eventually led to the referendum.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think also hate of Tories was
a
big part of it as well, because they'd had a Tory government for a few years.
Where it's, you know, it's one of those things, just when you're looking at history, you have to kind of balance various factors. I think the main question that we haven't really covered when talking about Catalonia is whether the EU will allow them to join as what would be the 28th member, presumably by the time they get round to it.
The understanding largely is no, that they'd have to apply as an independent state there.
And then go through the, what, 7-year process does it usually take?
I'm not sure
take?
How long it takes.
It depends. So when you join
but
the EU,
would
you,
be...
have to meet certain like democratic standards,
yes,
among other
yeah.
things. So there's criteria.
There are arguments within Catalonia that because they already have a lot of that infrastructure already in place, that process would be sped up. A lot of people understand that they would have to leave and then re-enter, but the 7-year process probably wouldn't happen.
It would probably be shorter than that.
But Spain, which is one of the largest countries in the EU and certainly the Eurozone, would probably make that as difficult as possible. And
so,
Spain was also a big... block, I would say, to Scottish people voting to leave and then staying in the European
yeah.
Union. Because if Scotland were able to continue its membership of the European Union, then the precedent would be set for a similar thing happening to Catalonia.
Yeah. And member states in the EU have a veto on any new members joining.
Yeah.
So that's
yeah,
pretty
exactly.
significant.
Also, Catalonia doesn't have its own currency. It still it uses the euro like the rest of Spain.
But new member states are expected to join the euro. So is that a major problem?
Correct. Well, if they're going 7 years using a type of currency that they don't have any power over.
I mean, none of the member states have any power over the euro except Germany, arguably.
I mean, arguably. but they...
Greece certainly don't, put it that way.
But especially for a part of the Spanish Peninsula that focuses quite a lot on the service sector and stuff like finance, that would be a big blow to them if they didn't have control over their own monetary policy.
I mean, would it be bad for the EU if they didn't allow Catalonia to join?
Bad in what sense?
Well, there's the argument that Brexit is kind of a moral hit to the EU, that it, you know, it violates the principle that once you join, you don't leave,
mm-hmm.
for instance. And it also, Britain also, assuming it does actually leave, which I think is an assumption at this point, will remove significant military power and a fairly large amount of money as well. But if Catalonia is the richest part of Spain as a region,
it's a net contributor to Spain.
Yeah, but if they were to leave and then fall out of the EU as well, what I'm asking is, does the EU, or do at least Eurocrats in Brussels, have an incentive to keep Catalonia in?
So European sentiment is very positive within Catalonia as well.
Yeah, they want to stay.
Yeah, they want to stay. And I would be confused if Europe said were like opposed to them wanting to
yeah.
be in it, because all of the prerequisites for a member state of the European Union are already there, in terms of language. Catalonian is an official language of the European Union already, for example. In terms of societally, they are an incredibly mixed, especially around Barcelona, where there's like it's really a hub of that area of the Mediterranean, where people from France and Italy and like Germany gravitate towards.
Yeah,
well, I'd be very confused if the EU were to become hard-nosed on that.
Yeah, so I guess what my point would be that this looks like a potential for a serious blow-up between Spain and the rest of the EU.
Yes, Spain being the only ones who were anti... I mean,
oh yeah, they're the only ones that really have a reason to oppose this.
Yeah, sure, but also Madrid is not going to okay this referendum.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be another advisory referendum, and it's bloody exhausting. And I think that there needs to be, because like you were saying, the fact that they had not over 50% of the votes voting for pro-independence parties.
Yes.
I think they need to wait until that is, like, over 50% of both the votes and the seats within the Catalonian legislature lean that way. And then I think Madrid has to say yes.
Like I think it would be in Madrid's interest to say yes far before that point, to be honest with you.
I mean, yeah, sure. And why they aren't doing this right now is crazy. Because also, people in Catalonia, currently it's a thin margin of about 4 points difference, but more people want to stay as part of Spain leave. The problem is, I think it's a similar problem to that of the Scottish referendum in 2014, where the person who would presumably be heading the quote-unquote Remain camp is a very unpopular prime minister in the shape of Mariano Rajoy, who is who is the leader of the Partido Popular, who are right-leaning, fiscally conservative.
So they're similar to the Tories in Britain.
Yeah, and also governing with a minority government as well.
Yeah.
It's all a bit... Spain's a bit crazy.
Yeah. Should we move on then?
Oh, if you like. Let's talk about sexism.
Are you wanting me to summarise the topic again? You're so lazy.
Yep.
So lazy.
No, I summarised Catalonia. It's your go.
All right, fine. Whatever. So, as we were saying earlier, the Advertising Standards Authority has come up with these proposals to ban sexist adverts in the sense of adverts that stereotype based on gender. Jazz gave the examples earlier of buffoonish men who can't do anything practical and are generally kind of useless.
What are they like?
Or little girls who like pink things and, you know, fluffy rabbits and sugar and spice and everything nice. And that sort of thing.
It's true because it rhymes.
Indeed. Yeah. Actually, people believe that things are more inclined to believe things are true if they rhyme. If you have some little saying. Anyway.
Really?
Seriously. Like it's a bias that people have if you look.
Well,
it up.
Why Trump didn't just do everything in rhyme, I would never know.
He probably doesn't have the talent. Bless. Let's be honest. He's not gifted with words, is our Donald.
Sure.
Gifted in a special sense.
Yeah.
What's your... You've obviously like read up a little bit on the ASA's proposal. What's your feeling around it?
I tentatively think this is a good thing.
Oh. Why?
So... I don't often agree with the Green Party, but the Green Party...
he says... weasel phrase.
The Green Party tweeted out the idea that you can't become what you don't see.
Oh,
shut up. You sarcastic sod. And I think there is some truth to that. And I had a deficit of examples of gay people when I was growing up. I just didn't see any examples of them beyond Stephen Fry. And me and Stephen Fry don't have a huge amount in common.
I think you have a bit in common.
He can spell.
That's true.
I'm dyslexic.
Well, you're both gay.
Yeah, and that was all I had. I had Stephen Fry, Lily Savage, who didn't actually clock was a man for a very long time, and Graham Norton. Those were the only gay men that I was aware of growing up.
Right.
And so it kind of restricted the people who I could like point at and go like, oh, that is something that I can aspire to. I wish I had somebody like Tom Daley or Robbie Richards or like sports people or business people who were out and talking about their experiences when I was growing up, because it would have made the navigation of the world easier for me. That's just what it would be.
Okay, how does that relate to advertising?
So that pertains to this particular thing because of the prevalence of advertising, especially when it comes to young kids. Kids see more adverts now than they ever have before, especially when they're using online digital services, like YouTube, for example, where gendered stereotypes are often reinforced, where girls are playing with pink things, boys are getting muddy and dirty. And I think it would be nice if there were more examples of gendered behaviour for people to...
You're not unconventional gendered behaviour.
Yeah. Non-binary gendered behaviour. Maybe not non-binary.
But I mean, we happen to be talking in a week where Doctor Who, for the first time, will be a lady rather than a man.
Oh, why didn't we talk about that? That would have been a good topic.
Because Doctor Who is shite.
It is shite!
I'm sorry to any viewers, it's not a good show.
No, I tweeted about this. I'm more excited about Stephen Moffat leaving so that there's the prospect of me possibly liking the show again than I am about there being a female Doctor.
I don't even know who Stephen Moffat is.
He's the man who made it shit. It was really good until David Tennant left. Anyway.
Well, my wider point, having brought up Doctor Who, is that there's lots and lots of examples of women doing unconventional things in other forms of media, in the sense that we have a female Prime Minister. You could argue that's still unconventional, although, as we mentioned before, she is the second one in Britain.
Oh, it's fixed then.
Well, you could argue it is to a significant degree. What's so big about advertising? Why do there need to be standards in advertising where we don't have standards for like TV shows or that sort of thing?
I think that advertising is particularly strong because it's trying to sell often ideology to you.
Trying to sell products to you.
Yeah, but also...
It's trying to sell lifestyle to you more.
Exactly.
More than
nowadays, if you're trying to sell a product, then you're doing advertising all wrong, Jimmy. You're meant to be selling aspiration to people. And I think that there is a different kind of power that comes with advertising. And I think also there is the chances of there being kind of like more progressive, more varied examples of gender roles is hindered by the lack of diversity at the top of advertising firms. Advertising in general does tend to have high female representation, but those who sit on boards are invariably still old white men who are the ones that end up making the decisions.
Right.
So where I think we both are usually on the same page is that I think that legislation should be unnecessary. And it does leave a funny taste in my mouth, but I think I'm not wed to advertisers a huge amount. And so I think making them think about the types of lives that they are representing to the world, I think that is a positive thing. Where I would... I don't like the idea of them ever being called up on it and prosecuted, though.
Right. But should they be fined or anything like that?
I don't know. But I like the idea of making them do it. But I like the idea of it being kind of a law where there is like a fine attached to it, but nobody ever actually gets fined. Do you know what I mean? So it forces them to actually think about it whenever they're making an advert.
I sort of don't care if they think about it, though. Which I suppose is our more fundamental disagreement.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, well, we kind of touched on this slightly earlier, but I think that... So I certainly think that biology plays a bigger role in defining gendered behaviour than you do. Put it that way. I certainly wouldn't say that there are girls' jobs and boys' jobs in the phrase of Theresa May, but there's certainly averages, if you like.
Sure.
I don't really have a problem with like unconventional or
gender
behaviour being portrayed, but I don't really give it. I think advertising is so shit anyway that it's such a moral cesspit.
How many people below the age of 30 have watched any adverts now?
So the only reason I still see adverts is when I'm out in public
when you're
on
watching
transport.
My videos.
Because I have ad blocker installed for YouTube.
You can whitelist my channel.
Can you do that now?
Yeah, my ads get played.
I didn't realise that. I apologise to any YouTubers who I watch regularly. I was not aware that was a feature. But yeah, advertising is just so bad anyway. Like, it's just such nonsense. I say that I work as a journalist, so my industry is partly based on advertising, although Google have stolen all the money.
But this is the thing. This is still the only way that an awful lot of media is able to pay for itself. So it's not an insignificant sector.
Yeah, I mean, there's more kind of wider things around product placement
and that sort of thing.
It's still advertising, yeah. As I said, I'm just not that offended by gender roles in advertising.
Yeah, because...
And to some degree, if you portray anyone doing anything, you reinforce the impression that that's acceptable mm-hmm. thing to do, right? I mean, you could even make the argument that... The Wolf of Wall Street was an immoral film because some people saw that film and didn't see a warning for how not to behave, but saw a manual for how to behave to make lots of money mm-hmm. and get a very attractive wife.
Mm-hmm. She was a very attractive lady.
Yes, mm-hmm. but I just don't really approve of regulators or government actually wading into kind of media and starting to essentially control or massively influence how people portray ideas and things. I just don't really see it as a suitable role for them. So this is a far more fundamental problem for me than actually just the gender roles.
I do understand that, but I just want to somehow make them think more about it. Because it's so easy to roll out the same tropes again and again and again.
I think they're more likely to think more about it probably because of pressure for things like the Beachbody Ready sort of anti-campaign, consumer pressure that's probably going to do more.
Yeah, but because of that, they got fined, and it's now illegal to show emaciated bodies in adverts.
I think is a positive thing. Were they fined? I thought they were just fined. Rebuked. Okay.
I believe they were fined.
Well, either way, they were sort of like wrapped on the wrists or mm-hmm. whatever.
Something happened.
I wasn't offended by the Beachbody Ready advert either, so...
But of course you weren't.
Well, you're probably going to say just because I'm a white man, but I actually think if I had the same political... There are women who were also not offended by that advert.
Yeah, sure.
Like, if you want to, you know, not ad hominem people, then you can look at their points of view instead.
I'm just saying that your gender, skin colour and sexuality probably does pay into your ideology when it comes to stuff like this.
Possibly, but...
Because you have been able to see people who look like you.
Don't give a shit when men are portrayed as idiots in,
adverts. No, but of course you don't. Of course you don't, Jimmy, because there are lots of examples of men not being idiots throughout media.
I'm not sure that's true.
Don't be silly.
The media is awash with... Well, media, politics, business is awash with stupid men doing lots of stupid things. I'm not sure that really... And, you know, anyway, it can... If there only is one, like, good role model, surely mm-hmm. the argument still applies for any demographic.
Do you think that there should be... Do you agree with me that they should think about it? If you were in charge of, like, an advertising firm, would you encourage your staff to think about the gender roles that they're portraying and not make them so fucking boring?
I mean, for cynical business reasons, yes, but not for reasons of principle.
Mm-hmm.
So... That's not really what you're trying to get at. I don't have a fundamental philosophical problem with it. I might do it for reasons of cynicism, but that's not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like choosing to appoint more women to your board because you want to portray a good public image, not because you think that there's a business case for it or because you're, you know, dedicated to mm-hmm. equity, I should say, in a wider sense.
I was going to talk about a company that I worked with over Pride, but I won't. if you would like to
I should also say there's kind of a wider problem here in that part of the ASA's remit is to regulate offensive adverts, and that is the vaguest shit that I've ever seen in mm-hmm. like all of government regulation. And it's just unpoliceable.
But this is the thing, I think it's deliberately vague, but then the ASA actually very rarely steps in. I think usually the ASA is actually very good in terms of how it ends up using the powers that it has. Mm. I don't think it generally oversteps its bounds, and when it does make rulings and suggestions, it does so tentatively and sensibly.
Yeah, well, I'm not really familiar with the history of the ASO or that
as
industry
a YouTuber,
in general.
We've been at the like it's the reason that I have to put hashtag ad at the end of anything
right,
that's paid.
Yeah.
For example,
I just don't see it as the government's job to regulate offensive content, whatever that means.
So. Dun dun dun. Also, curiously, in other news, you know that we're all going to have to, if you want to watch porn, you're going to have to register your credit card if you want to do so by 2019.
Mm.
Fun. Anyway, if you'd like to...
Is it possible to open a bank account under a false name?
I think the whole point is that you can't.
Mm.
I'm just...
I'm not sure that's true. Maybe it is true.
Do you want to have that as homework and you can come back next week and let us know?
People who are worried about losing access to porn, I will figure out some solution.
Don't you guys wait. Let us know what you think of this ruling, because I actually think that from the... We've got some diverse
not
people who listen to this.
Not it's a proposal.
This proposal.
Some diverse people. What does
that mean? it means that some people started listening from the Sargon of Akkad episode, and some of them started...
You meant diversity in a broad sense rather than just not white or not men.
It's mainly men from the interactions we get. Although, a splattering of incredibly well-engaged and intelligent women. And we'd love to hear from all of you across the gender and the political spectrum. Let us know what you think.
Your voice is becoming more Margaret
Thatcher. Yeah, I know.
As this goes on.
If you'd like to let us know what you think of this rolling suggestion, as well as other things that we talked about today that I can't remember right now, then please do leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, just share us with one person who might like us.
Anyone, though. Don't push it.
Yeah. Oh, Twitter. I'm at Jazza John.
Twitter.
Jimmy's at JD Nichols.
Twitter.
You gotta stop Twitter. Taking the piss out of my accent. It's just how I speak.
Sorry, got a bit
nasty.
Got a bit Yankee on me.
Yeah. At Right Dishonor, this is the worst ending we've ever done. Okay, bye.
I don't think it is.
Really?
I'm not sure.
All right, toodaloo, everybody.